Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, a solo pod reaction to the games from Thursday, look ahead to Friday, Saturday in the NCAA tournament, talk some Ohtani, and that's a big story. Have to talk about that. So a little bit of everything here on this quick little recap pod of Thursday, which was the first day of the tournament and a bit of a dud. I mean, Kentucky and Oakland kind of saved the day. Oakland specifically with the upset of Kentucky. Calipari again goes down in the first round and there are going to be questions. There already are questions about Calipari's future. Is it time to move on? I talked about this, I don't know, a month ago, 6 weeks ago. I was like, you know what? Maybe it's run the course here. I mean, he's won one NCAA tournament game in 5 years with all of that NBA talent. So look, I think it's a fair question to ask. It's a fair question to raise. I like Calipari. He's an easy guy to root for. You know, he's likable. He's relatable. He's got a sense of humor. But, I mean, he just hasn't won enough in these spots here. He's just really underachieved. Won the title back in 2012 with Davis and that great team where they had two of the top three picks. They had a bunch of other NBA players. And you look at through these rosters, and it's just NBA player after NBA player. But he hasn't won a lot. I mean, it's been since 2019, since he even made a Sweet 16. It's been a decade since he made a Final Four. So Calipari goes down again. Oakland pulls off the massive upset as the 14th seed. And really, that was about it for Thursday. The night slate was a little better than the day slate. Samford made the game competitive against Kansas. Drake and Washington State was competitive as Drake just threw up all over themselves again. Second year in a row, they had a big lead, a good size lead against Miami last year. Last 6 or 7 minutes blew the game. Same thing against Washington State, where they're up, you know, 7 points with 6 minutes to go. They just ran the worst offense. They were throwing the ball out of bounds. They completely gave the game away. So the night games were a little better. But other than that, it was a lot of blowouts. Now, I know Duquesne upset BYU. So that was, at least in terms of the point spread, a big upset. But nobody thought BYU was going anywhere in this tournament. Nobody's picking BYU to, you know, go to the Final Four, win the championship. So that wasn't that shocking in terms of an upset. And I mean, look, that's what this tournament's about. The tournament is about, you know, your bracket. It's about buzzer beaters. And more than anything, it's about upsets. So when you only get the one, and look, it was a good one. A three seed went down. That's a good one. But other than that, I mean, Gonzaga McNeese was a bore. My Mississippi State, Michigan, which was my sleeper, Mississippi State, Michigan State, the first game of the day on Thursday was not competitive. Morehead looked like they were going to hang with Illinois, but that game fell apart on them. I mean, you just go down the line. There were a lot of blowouts. Tennessee St. Peter's was unwatchable. A lot of these games were just really tough to take. Colorado State, Texas. I turned Colorado State, Texas on. And I think Colorado State was up 8-2. I said, all right, the team coming out of the plane here, maybe they're competitive. Maybe they can give you something. And before you know it, it was, I think, 27-11 at halftime. Colorado State scored 3 points in the last like 15 minutes of the half. And let's face it, look, nobody loves this tournament more than me, but when your bets aren't winning, and I had a rough day with the bets, and you're not getting the upsets, you're not getting the buzzer beaters, this tournament can lose its charm pretty quickly. You just go down the line here. Thank God for Oakland giving this a little juice. Nevada blew the game against Dayton. That was interesting. Nevada had a 17-point lead with 7 minutes to go, so they completely gagged the game away. And it's interesting, they were on the other end of it. It was 7 years ago against Cincinnati, where Cincinnati was the two. I think Nevada was the 10 seed with the Martin twins, and Cincinnati stole the game in similar fashion, but Nevada just gave the game away against Dayton. But other than that, Illinois ran away against Morehead. UNC Wagner unwatchable. Arizona Long Beach unwatchable. Creighton buried Akron. Duquesne BYU was interesting because, look, Duquesne didn't belong to be an 11. BYU got a break there, but the break didn't matter as Duquesne won the game. So keep an eye on Duquesne, and that sets up an interesting second round matchup here against Illinois. But again, Texas, Colorado State was really tough to watch. Iowa State against South Dakota State, nothing interesting. NC State against Texas Tech and Oregon, these two bid stealers who, look, I admit I was on it. Like, hey, you got to be careful. These teams that win their conference tournaments, they go all out to win them, and who knows what they have left. Well, they had plenty left. NC State wins again, so they advance to play Oakland in the round of 32. And this is why the round of 32, I think, is my favorite round, because you get a weird mix of really good competitive games. You know, UNC's playing Michigan State. You get a lot of times just really good teams versus really good teams, but you also have a few of these random matchups like, Oakland versus NC State, where one of those teams is going to the Sweet 16. Imagine telling somebody 2-3 weeks ago, hey, Oakland and NC State are going to play in the NCAA tournament and the winner is going to the Final 16. So the Saturday slate is out. I hate how they stack these games. I wish it was a little more balanced. It's just in terms of the afternoon, and they don't start these games until later in the night, really. I mean, you get one at 12:45 Eastern, Dayton, Arizona. Then you get Kansas and Gonzaga. Again, that's a perfect example. Those are two sort of blue blood programs facing off, where you get this mix of blue blood versus blue blood, and then you get these random teams facing off. So it's a lot of fun. But that game's 3:15 Eastern. And then Michigan State, North Carolina, another really good matchup in terms of the programs with pedigree. That's Saturday, 5:30 Eastern. 6 o'clock Eastern is Washington State, Iowa State. I think that'll be a competitive game. And then you get the night slate really kicks off, I would say, from that point on. 7 o'clock Eastern, it is Oakland against NC State. Fun matchup, weird matchup. That's probably the one game I'm most excited about. Texas, Tennessee is good. That starts a little after. Duquesne, Illinois, we'll see if Duquesne can keep it going. And then Oregon against Creighton, the Dana Altman Bowl. Altman coached Creighton for a long time, 13, 14 years. So Oregon, the bid sealer against Creighton, that's a fun matchup. That's 9:40 Eastern on Saturday. Again, they start these games Saturday, especially Sunday. These games start way too long. I remember the tournament used to be Sunday afternoon. The games would start at noon, and you get all the games over by 8, 9 o'clock. Now it's the opposite, where they only play one early, then one mid-afternoon, and then all the games are backloaded late, which I don't know the appeal of it. So second round should be fun. The first Thursday was a bit of a dud. We'll see if we get something better here on Friday. I'm not sure that we do, because you know, you get 16 games on a Friday. Three of them are going to be the one seed, so you can probably cross three of those off right away. I mean, UConn, Stetson, Houston, Longwood, Purdue against Grambling. So, you know, I don't know what you're going to get here Friday. Maybe Charleston hangs against Bama. Maybe Yale hangs against Auburn. Wisconsin, James Madison should be a good game. You got Grand Canyon, St. Mary. So we'll see what the Friday slate brings us. The lines are out for Saturday. And the lines are interesting. This is really an interesting round where you get a good mix here of competitive games. You know what's good about the second round? The 16 seeds are gone. The 15 seeds are usually gone. So it's not, I mean, there's not like three or four games where you just cross off like on Thursday where a number of the games were just unwatchable. So Tennessee's laying 6.5 against Texas. Iowa State's laying 8.5 against Washington State. That seems like a lot of points. Washington State's not a bad team. Very lucky to win. Very fortunate the way Drake just completely crumbled for the second year in a row. But at that point, that's one that jumps off the page, is Washington State plus the 8.5. NC State laying 6 against Oakland. So NC State is favored here to go to the Sweet 16 after being completely dead a week ago. So that's one to keep an eye on. UNC laying 3.5 against Michigan State. That's a low number for a one seed. Again, UNC is not a typical one seed. And Michigan State with the pedigree with Izzo, I feel like an idiot for picking against Izzo. So that's an interesting game. Creighton laying 5.5 against Oregon. Illinois laying 9.5 against Duquesne. I could see Illinois pulling away from Duquesne in that game. And then you get Arizona laying 9.5 against Dayton. Don't know how I feel about that game. Arizona, they have high highs. They have low lows. They're better than Dayton. I don't trust them laying that big of a number, but I don't know that I want to take it either. So good games, fun games. The round of 32 on Saturday, then on Sunday is a lot of fun. We'll see if we get something Friday in terms of upsets. But again, the story of the day was on Thursday was Calipari and Kentucky losing again early. And other than that, it really wasn't a lot. I mean, it's a lot of games where if you didn't watch anything, if you're busy, if you're working, if you're doing whatever, you didn't really feel like you missed a lot. Duquesne beats BYU, Nevada and Dayton. Nevada completely crumbles. Drake crumbles. Samford makes a run at the end to get at least cover against Kansas, get within the number. But that was, you know, never really in doubt. You got better games late than you did early, but a lot of unwatchable basketball. And again, this tournament loses its charm when you're not getting upsets, when you're not getting buzzer beaters, and you're losing your bets. This tournament can lose its charm quickly, and I felt the effects of that on Thursday. So hopefully Friday will be more fun. I mean, look, we've gotten spoiled a little bit with these upsets. I mean, I remember a 15 beating a 2 was like not unheard of, but a once in a decade kind of thing. It was nearly unheard of. And then like 2012, 2013, we got a rash of 15s beating 2s. And then it became a little more common. In the last 3 years, not only have a 15 won in every single year, the last 3 years coming into this year, but the 15s have gone to a Sweet 16 3 years in a row, which has never happened before until a few years ago. And that's again, Oral Roberts, St. Peter's, and then last year with Princeton. So we've gotten spoiled a little bit with these upsets. There's nothing written in stone. There's nothing that says we're entitled to these upsets. We did get the 14 beating the three, which kind of saved the day. But other than that, kind of a ho-hum Thursday. We'll see what Friday brings us. And then the weekend should be good. Saturday should be good. Sunday should be good with all of these matchups. You can focus a little more on the games. It starts to get a little depressing after this, where, you know, after Saturday and Sunday, the madness kind of dies down, where it's only a couple games at a time. Before you know it, you're down to 16, you're down to 8, you're down to kind of one game at a time by the time you get to the next weekend. So the fun of the beginning of the tournament is just the fact that there's so many games, the volume of games. So when some of these games just fall flat and they're duds, it does take a little bit of the luster out of the tournament. But we'll see what Friday brings us. We'll see what Saturday brings us. And we'll see what this tournament has going forward as the big boys lace them up on Friday. You get the UConns, the Purdue's, the Houston's, and we'll see what happens from there. But coming up next, when we come back, we'll talk a little Ohtani, talk a little NFL, some of these moves that are under the radar. That is next. This is the Should've Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should've Bet More podcast. Let's talk a little baseball. We got to talk about the Ohtani stuff. Came out Wednesday afternoon, and I'm sure most people saw it, but Ohtani's interpreter gets fired. It was, first off, the Dodgers changed their story, where we thought maybe that the money was borrowed to pay off some gambling debts for the interpreter, and the interpreter borrowed the money from Ohtani. Then it was, no, the money was stolen, and Ohtani's a victim, and, you know, $4.5-5 million got stolen from Ohtani, and there's going to be criminal charges. Maybe more will have come out by the time you listen to this, but nobody believes that's the truth. I mean, we don't know what happened. Maybe we'll find out, maybe we won't. I think there's incentive on both sides, both Major League Baseball and Ohtani, for this story to just go away. And maybe there's enough power with Major League Baseball, with Ohtani, with his agent, things like that, where he can just, hey, we can go with the story that, hey, interpreter stole the money. Whatever happened there is over with. He's gone, and we move on. Maybe that's possible, but nobody believes that. I mean, do I have any idea what exactly happened? No, but the logical next step is people are making, hey, and there's probably Ohtani making the bets, possibly Ohtani making the bets. And I've heard people compare this to Pete Rose. This is not a Pete Rose situation. Pete Rose was managing and betting on his own team. If you read the reports, it was, hey, maybe it was some soccer involved. As long as he wasn't betting on baseball, maybe this can go away. It'll be fascinating to find out. Again, Major League Baseball and Ohtani are both aligned here. So it's not like Major League Baseball is out to get Ohtani. This is their, in a lot of ways, their face of the game. It's funny. If this is true and this is really Ohtani making the bets, and he's got an issue with the betting, this is really the first personality characteristic we even know about Ohtani. For as good as he is, hitter, pitcher, this great talent, we don't really know anything about him. He doesn't do a lot of media. We don't have any feel for his personality, who he is, that kind of thing. We don't know anything about Ohtani. This would be the first. So again, can Major League Baseball, can Ohtani, can they get together and can they sell this story even though nobody's buying it? Is there a way to make this go away? We will see. And Major League Baseball would love for this to go away. I'm sure the Dodgers would love for this to go away. And it was a rough 24 hours for the Dodgers. They spent $700 million on Ohtani and another $300-something million on Yamamoto. And Yamamoto got shelled his first outing. So maybe that's something to keep an eye on. You never know. I mean, guys never pitched in the majors. I think it'll be good. I wouldn't worry too much about one start. But, hey, we've seen these guys come over highly touted. Now it's years ago now. And Tanaka was good. And we've seen, you know, Ohtani be good. But I remember Hideki Arabu was supposed to be great. He came over and he was okay. I remember his first start or two. He's like, yeah, he's pretty good. But, you know, I think he's called the Japanese Nolan Ryan. He never came close to being that. Matsuzaka for the Red Sox, going back 15 years or so, he was supposed to be great. He was okay. He was serviceable, but he wasn't anything special. So you never know. And look, it's until he establishes a big league career and some success in the big leagues, there will be that question. And he comes out and gets rocked his first outing. Again, is it the end of the world? No, but it's something to keep an eye on. So rough couple days for the Dodgers. I don't know what the end game is here for Ohtani. Can this kind of go away? I mean, we saw the Temple UAB scandal a couple of weeks ago in college basketball, and it was, wow, the line moved. There's some suspicion. Then the story just went away. I don't know if this Ohtani story can go away, if it's too big, if the government starts to get involved, the IRS, where it's like, all right, you're accusing him of a crime. This is going to be looked into. I don't think these bets were made legally. They don't seem like they were made legally. It's not like these bets were made with, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel. Betting's not legal in California, so it's through a bookie. So that there's that aspect of it too, where it's possible where they don't have the power to make this go away. And it was Chris Carter 7 or 8 years ago when it got a lot of attention. The former wide receiver, Hall of Fame receiver, said, "Hey, everybody who's a big time athlete, you need a fall guy. If there's a crime committed, he's on the payroll. He's there to take the hit. Now, if this is a situation where this interpreter is willing to admit the things that aren't true and really take the hit here, I don't know. Fascinating situation. You could tell that, boy, I was watching. It was the end of the Padres-Dodgers game on Thursday morning. And why Major League Baseball felt the need to start there? They're so bad at marketing sport anyway. Why they felt the need to start their season on a Wednesday morning, middle of the night, 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 a.m. Eastern. You're going to start your season middle of the week, middle of the night, in the same week where March Madness starts. Nobody cared about the start of the season. Most people didn't even know the season was starting. Then they go back and play spring training games. That's the dumbest thing ever. But I was watching the game end, the second game on Thursday morning. And after, I think it was First Take came on, it's Stephen A. Smith, Molly Karam, and they have some investigative woman that works for ESPN, and they're trying to talk about this gambling thing, and they were so over their heads. Oh, my God. The woman was saying, well, Otani's a victim, and how could this happen to him? So she had no idea. She was, you know, and look, I guess you got to just go with the story and assume that that's a possibility. We don't know what happened. Again, we have no idea. We're all speculating, although it does not, nobody believes it. It doesn't pass the smell test. But then Molly Karam asked Stephen A., hey, if Otani paid off these debts, should he be suspended? I mean, what are we talking about? So that they were certainly over their heads in terms of the gambling situation, but rough couple of days for the Dodgers. Again, Major League Baseball starting the season, middle of the week, middle of the night, Wednesday morning in South Korea, where nobody watches, nobody cares. I mean, just really not the way to market the sport, but it'll be here before you know it. We'll get into the real season. So we'll be fascinated, really fascinated to see what comes of this Otani story, if anything. And maybe it just goes away. Maybe it's something where we look back in a month, a couple months, and say, wow, remember that Otani story a couple months ago? That seemed to disappear. It's highly, highly incentivized for both parties to make this go away. So we'll see if they can make that happen. It does bring into questions of like, hey, if these leagues, and you turn on NBA TV, you turn on, you know, any of these games, and it's just nonstop ad after nonstop ad for DraftKings and FanDuel. I mean, it never stops. And you wonder if it gets to a point where, all right, it's one thing if it's legal, it's one thing if you advertise a little bit, but it's the nonstop advertisement. And you wonder if the lines have been blurred too much. And look, there were gambling scandals before it became legal. I mean, Paul Hornung and Pete Rose, I mean, you go down the line, the Black Sox, I mean, they've been playing betting scandals for a long time. The whispers of Jordan liking to gamble, although we never got the sense he was betting on sports. But this is definitely, I mean, we saw the NFL players get in trouble for betting. You do wonder if the lines have been blurred a little bit, where it's like, all right, do these leagues, they're making so much money off it that, you know, I don't know if they can go back and really put the toothpaste back in the tube and get rid of the advertising altogether. But you do wonder if it's gone a little bit overboard and the lines are just so blurred now between everything is betting everywhere all the time. And look, this is a betting podcast, so there's a time and a place for the betting. I don't know if it's every time you watch a game, it's, you know, four or five ads an hour on betting and the lines are up as you watch the game. I wonder if it's too much and we've gone too far. So baseball season has started. Dodgers 1-1. Boy, they can hit though. I mean, they just keep coming at you in waves. I mean, they're down 5 runs, 8 runs. You never feel out of the game if you're watching, if you're rooting for the Dodgers. Maybe that's the way to bet them. If they fall behind early, you just get them on the live line, almost like the Golden State Warriors with Durant and Curry or past years, or the Chiefs with Mahomes when they're down 10 points. Maybe the Dodgers fall behind 2 or 3 runs, and that's when you bet them. I don't know if the books will adjust and just not give you a fair price, but that lineup is absolutely relentless. Assuming they have all their guys. I mean, they just keep coming at you and at you with Betts and Freeman and Otani. And they've added a couple guys here. Teoscar Hernandez is just a relentless lineup. So, again, their season's not going to start till October, though. I mean, they could win 108, 110 games, and they might. And if they lose to the Reds in the first round, they're just going to get even more destroyed for it. They do not have great pitching. So that is a weakness there. They do not have great pitching. They do have a great lineup. And we'll see here the rest of the season about to start. Quickly on the NFL. Haven't talked a lot of NFL. I mean, the free agency got so much attention with Barkley and the quarterbacks. I talked about that for a little bit a couple weeks ago. A couple NFL moves that did fly under the radar before we get out of here. The Jets have done a good job remaking this offensive line. Now, I don't know enough about these players. You know, is Tyron Smith, is he old and injury prone and he's not going to help, or he's going to be a difference maker? I don't know. But the Jets, if those moves hit and they have a good offensive line with Rodgers, with the 10th pick, with that defense, that's an underrated little subplot of the season. And maybe it affects who they pick at 10. I think all the assumption was that 10th pick in the draft the Jets have is going to go to an offensive lineman. They have a little more flexibility now, maybe, where they don't have to get an offensive lineman. Maybe they can get one of the receivers. They did sign Mike Williams, so maybe they can add an Adunze, or I don't know if Neighbors will fall to them, and they could trade up. You can get Bowers. You can do some different things. So, look, I thought the Jets would be good last year. We never found out. I mean, you can't say you're wrong because Rodgers didn't play and they still won seven games. So I think the Jets, if that offensive line is as good as it could be with some of those names, that's something to watch. And the other thing to watch, the Vikings went under the radar. The Vikings traded up. Now they have the 11th pick and they traded up to get the 23rd pick. So it sounds like it looks like they're positioning themselves to move up again and package 11, package 23, and maybe get to 5, maybe get to 3, and get either May or McCarthy. Sounds like four of these quarterbacks are going to go off before the 6th and 7th pick. Sounds like it's going to be four in the first 6, I think is how you should phrase it, where Giants probably going to have a quarterback, probably going to draft a quarterback. They probably have to get a quarterback. You know, Jones is not the answer, despite all the money you're paying them. So does McCarthy, May, Daniels, and Williams, is that four of the top 6? It's looking like it's possible. So maybe if Minnesota looks, hey, we have to get in front of the Giants because the Giants are getting a quarterback. Would New England be willing to move down? That we'll keep an eye on, but I do think that move signifies, hey, Minnesota's got something up their sleeve, and the Jets moves with the offensive line is something to keep an eye on. And once you get into this NCAA tournament, it's all encompassing, and you know it takes up so much of your viewing if you're a college basketball fan. By the time it ends, NBA season is pretty much over. NFL draft is pretty much here. So once this ends, you look up and you got some fun things ahead with the NBA playoffs, the NFL draft here in the middle of April. So the tournament starts a little later. It ends a little later. And by the time it's over, you know, we are looking at a draft, the NBA playoffs. So it comes and goes pretty quickly. So we will be back on Monday breaking down all the NCAA tournament action. We'll start to do more drafts, start to do more baseball as the season is in full swing next week. But appreciate you guys listening. See you next week. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe. See you later.